Welcome to The Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show, so stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point.
Hello, friends, and welcome to The Point, the home services podcast that focuses on marketing and operational solutions to help you get better. Because if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. Now, let's cut through the bullshit and get to the point.
What's up, everybody? It's your boy, your host, To The Point, Chris Yano, along with my man, Tall Paul, my co-host, looking dapper as always with his is that a Patagonia or a North Face hat?
North Face, thank you.
Man.
Not a sponsor.
Good branding. Yeah. It's going to be a fun one, man. This is episode, Kyle, make sure I get it right, 49. Is that correct? 49. Which, by the way, Paul, that's one away from 50. Did you know that?
I did know that, and I hear that there's a surprise guest for 50 that I don't know a whole lot about, maybe. I don't know if I'm setting the expectation too high.
I don't know. Guess we'll find out, huh?
Guess we'll find out. Episode hopefully it's Travis Ringy.
Episode surprise. 49. If Ken Goodrich had his way, it'd be him. But it's not going to be. So episode number 49. I'm super excited, man. This has been a fun year of podcasts, and we've had a lot of amazing guests. Man, the volume of downloads and streams and subscribers of this has just absolutely blown our minds. So thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts. We're super grateful. And 100%, Paul, I attribute it to our guests.
I do too.
Genuinely believe we've had phenomenal guests, and I'm like, the volume of people reaching out to us this year and just thanking us is like the most rewarding thing. So I can't say thank you enough. And our guest today is no different. Man, this is going to be a good one. I'm excited. We've had a couple conversations. I just have a feeling this is going to be a fun podcast. It's going to drop on, today would be December 22nd. So we are awfully close to Christmas.
And you are in the Christmas spirit now. You are like, I can see it radiating from you, Yano Claus. This is your time of year. What's going on with your Christmas lights?
So listen, it's December 1. The switch is on. I'm full Clark Griswold Christmas mode. Like, all the lights in the house are done. You know, flip the switch, except mine work. At least part of the time. If you ask my wife, there's always one day where I come home and something's off or not working and I got to go fix the damn thing. Always. But that being said, I'm in good spirits always. I love Christmas time. So it's my absolute favorite time of year. So, yes, I'm feeling really, really good. Is that okay with you, Paul?
It is okay. Is there now you're a big giver. You like to give gifts, but is there something that you're hoping, maybe Saint Nick brings for you this year, Yano?
You know what? This is what my dad used to always tell me. And the one thing he always asked for was a white Christmas. Now I live in Phoenix, Arizona. So we just go up to the cabin and hope it snows.
There you go.
It's at 7,000 feet, so we should get some snow. But, I love to give. It's weird for me to receive gifts. Like, it makes me slightly uncomfortable because I don't expect those things. And I'm grateful. It just kind of makes me awkward. And I'm like the most, extrovert person you've met, outgoing person. It just makes me awkward. So, listen, let's get to it. I wanted to get our guest rolling. Got some good knowledge. I saw, I've seen him on a lot of other webinars and podcasts and things like that. And one, man, I feel like anytime you have an accent, you're immediately like better than everybody else. You know why? It just makes you cooler when you have an accent. So my kids play soccer. Eddie, you'll appreciate this. My kids play soccer. If your coach speaks with an English accent or has a European accent or whatever, any sort of accent, mm-hmm. they're immediately a better coach.
They can charge more.
That's 100% accurate. It is
absolutely accurate. So my daughter's coach is from England, and his accent immediately made him cool, like the best, like the better coach. Isn't that right, Kyle? You played soccer. You know what I'm talking about? 100%, right? See? So our guest, Eddie McFarland, he is from, let me make sure I get this right, Eddie, Aloha, Scotland.
Very close. Aloha.
Son of a
It's a lot less Hawaiian than you would think.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I would imagine. So is it, that's outside of Edinburgh, right? Or Edinburgh. Edinburgh.
Yep. Yep. 10 points. Yep. It's halfway between Glasgow and Stirling. And the town I grew up is halfway between Glasgow and Edinburgh, Stirling, Alloway area.
So, you know, so it looks like Edinburgh to us Americans.
Yes.
How I learned it was Edinburgh is, if you remember, I was traveling to Ireland in March for spring break, and we were going to go over to Scotland. And I really was excited to go to both places. I've been wanting to go forever. So we fly over there, and I'm like, hey, before I go, I'm asking Eddie. I'm like, you're from Scotland, man. Like, I need the scoop. Like, one, you know, I'm going to go to Edinburgh. And he's like, first off, it's not Edinburgh. It's Edinburgh.
It's a big deal.
Huge deal. I hear. Yeah. But you remember what else I asked you was, listen, like, I grew up in one of my favorite movies is Braveheart. So Sir William Wallace was like an icon, you know, to me. And I think a lot of people who watch that movie are like, yeah, Sir William Wallace is a badass.
Never seen it.
That doesn't shock me. That's because you were watching My Little Ponies. no offense, anybody likes My Little Ponies. Just Paul. But so is my daughter. So I'm getting ready to go over there, and I'm like, is William Wallace, like, as big of a deal?
You
know? Is it, like, that big? Is it, like, to Scotsman?
It's 100% a thing. So I went to school in Stirling, and true story, where we played rugby in out back, that was the field of the Bannockburn, the site of one of the few victories over the English. It was only 700 years ago, so we're not keeping score. and if you looked out my art, my science class window, you would see Stirling Castle, which is in the movie. It's, you know, where he gets abducted. And then out my art window, there's Wallace Monument, which is this tall 300-foot sandstone, beautiful monument you can actually walk up the inside of on a volcanic plug.
So cool.
That gives you a view of the Forth Valley, and you can see the abbey where he was schooled. You can see everything there. It's pretty cool.
So
yeah, and it's a thing.
So he has his sword, but it's not like, I think it's, is it really his sword? But there's like a sword, right?
Yep.
Like, is that, isn't it in Stirling, right?
It's actually in the Wallace Monument. So the way it works, they've got the four stops along the way. These walls are like 4 feet thick, and it's an old castle style.
So like those real small spiral staircases. Yep. Tight.
Yep. And they have his sword there, and
that's
then
cool.
In Bannockburn, which the only thing about Braveheart is Robert the Bruce got a raw deal. He actually was, he wasn't necessarily weak as they make out, and he has a whole heritage center with a whole bit where you can get his axe and all his stuff, and yeah, it's pretty cool. If you like stones, castles, battles, you can't throw a stone in Scotland without hitting a castle or battle site or something.
Well, so I didn't get to go. I'm bummed because obviously the COVID thing kicked off while I was in Ireland, and when we were in Belfast and we were going to take our flight over, this is in March. Our plan was to go to Scotland and then fly back into Dublin and spend St. Patrick's Day in Dublin. So that didn't get to happen. I didn't even get to go to Scotland. And I was so excited to go there and see all that stuff, man. So now I have to make another trip back.
Just go to Scotland.
That's the plan.
Just forget Ireland, forget England. Just go spend some time in Scotland. You'll fall in love. I guarantee it.
I have no doubt. So listeners, you're going to hear it here first. Rhino is opening up an office in the UK, and we're not sure if it's going to be the UK or if it's going to be, it's probably going to be the UK, that side, somewhere over there in 2022, because we are opening our Australia office in 2021. So listen, any early adopters want to come on board with the best of the best in digital marketing for the trades, give a shout out. We'll use our advocate as we roll into the new countries. So I'm super excited about that. Hey, listen, wasn't William Wallace, to back that real quick, like 6'5"? Was he a big guy, I think I read?
He's what's affectionately referred to as a big lad.
So
he's a big lad.
Paul, he's not much shorter than you, man.
He's not, but I mean, he's not that big. 6'5"? I have a kid that's 6'5".
Yeah, but you also have no clue who he is, nor are anywhere near the type of man that Sir William Wallace was.
I'm going to watch the movie, even though you guys just pretty much ruined it in the show. You told me everything.
Surprise ending. And you know what?
Okay.
History will be the judge, Paul. Like, that's a good thing. We'll let history judge.
Yeah, no, thank you. I'm on it.
I fancy your chances.
So, listen, I apologize, listeners, for going down this path of Scotland. But listen, Braveheart's pretty awesome. And it's always kind of good to hear those, like, what's real and what's not from those movies. So, listeners, Eddie McFarlane, he's a VP of Learning and Development at Haller Enterprises, a small little itty-bitty company over there in the Northeast. Eddie, how big is Haller these days?
We have about 400 team members.
Nice.
Four locations.
And yeah, because you're kind of around central PA area, yeah. Right? But you're officially in Lititz, right?
Yeah. Yep. Excellent. Lititz, which is just outside Lancaster.
You're kind of like right in that little middle area in between the Reading or Lancaster.
Yep. Yep. It's halfway between Philly and Harrisburg.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. Cool. Yep. So it's probably a little colder there than this year. But you're also one of the co-founders of Schedule Engine, which is a strategic partner of Rhino's. So and it's been a very great partnership, and you know, our customers, I was just having a conversation yesterday with the customer who was, you know, shouting the praises of us making that connection with Schedule Engine. And again, the only time we ever bring on a strategic partner, and Paul can attest to this, we get so many people trying to approach us about being a air quotes partner. And yeah, you know, we do not choose. It's got to legit be best for our customers, number one, before we ever even entertain that. And listen, like, we put each other, like, we put Schedule Engine through the ringer, making sure it was a fit, and it's been great, and we're super grateful. Eddie, you know what we should do? It's the season for giving. Here's what we're going to do. This is airing on December 22nd. Are you ready for this? Eddie, just agree with whatever I say, okay?
I like the tone of this so far.
Okay. So here's what we're going to do. Anybody listening, if you don't know what Schedule Engine is, number one, look at it. And Eddie's going to talk about it on the episode a little bit too, just we'll kind of give an overview of what it is. Allows for some good online scheduling, easy access. It's been extremely successful for our contractors that are using it. For those people who don't want to actually talk to someone, they can just book right through the site. It's awesome. And the conversion rates are super high, which means revenue goes up. It's a great deal. But here's what, let's do this. It's the season of giving, Paul. So I say we do this for the first time. We don't do this very often. But if you want to sign up for scheduling between now and the end of the year and give it a go, let's waive the setup fee, Eddie. We're going to waive the setup fee.
Just nod.
Just give me a yes. Thank you. And then let's offer the first month. Let's offer the first month for free. Like, let's give them the first month. Perfect. But you got to use the...
I love it.
Let's use a promo code, if you will, of To The Point. Like, you gotta reference, hey, I heard this on To The Point. We'll do it from now to the end of the year. You cool with that?
I love it. It's a great way to celebrate the holidays and all the great work that contractors do all year round. Let's do it.
Absolutely. Awesome. Good. You guys heard it here first. Let's go. And you get the first month free. So listen, I love it, man. We always say, don't talk about it, be about it. If you need to show us what you're made of and you get the first month to get it done, that's perfect.
So, and it's built by a contractor, which is, I think, probably my favorite element of it.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Built out of a real need.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're scratching our own itch for sure.
Yep. Love it.
Awesome, man.
Well, let's jump into it, man. So one, welcome. I'm so glad to have you on here. I'm so glad that, that you would give us the time to come and share with all of our listeners about just kind of your thoughts on really a few different topics, technicians, technology, things for the future that we need to be thinking of. I know you're super, you're super passionate about those things and even super successful with these things too. So let's share some of the information, but go ahead and let our listeners know right up front, like, who is Eddie? Who is Eddie McFarlane? How did you get into the trades? Where are you at today? Like, let's kind of give a little overview before we go into those questions.
So Eddie McFarlane, Sagittarius. No, Eddie McFarlane. So like a lot of people, I came to the industry a while ago, 20 years. And believe it or not, 20 years ago, there was a skilled trade shortage. So weird. I'm actually a second career guy. I wasn't the kid taking the toaster apart. I didn't rebuild a hot rod at 12 with my dad in the shop. But I was the incredible beneficiary of a company with great people, great processes, and great systems. And so through that, I was able to do I spent my first couple of weeks carrying other people's tools and wrapping up extension cords incorrectly, apparently. and being the helper, working way through, like everything else, became a PM technician, service, did the, 2 o'clock in the morning on call thing, 18-hour days in the winter, right? You know, really taking care of people and developing a deep ethos for really what is the heart of our industry, which is great people taking care of people, building communities, building trust, and serving, right? Deep humility. And so I started that way. And about 15 years ago, I joined the Haller team. Haller Enterprises. So starting in 1981, quintessential trade story, entrepreneur, started out a garage and within, a short period of time had developed to be, so Rick Haller was an electrician, came out the ag sector of the industry as an electrician working for his uncle. And like so many people that are listening to this podcast, they just got a niche that, there's a better way to do this. And for many contractors, it could be anything, right? Like I want to take care of my customers a certain way. I want to offer these types of services. I want to do business this way. And so like Manny, he jumped in and within his first year hired a plumber. And so did two services, and then the following year hired an HVAC guy. So our genesis has been to be multi-trade. A lot of construction in the 80s and 90s with Lancaster County. And then I joined about 15 years ago. We were doing some residential sales, but it didn't really have a customer-centric base. It was really, we were tripping over, all the work that we'd done for the last 30 years. There was a lot of people working hard at it, but Rick, the visionary that he always is, wanted to put the customer at the center of that. So I was hired along with a few team members, and very early on, a classic example, and we'll probably talk about this. I was sent to a conference by BDR, right, Business Development Resources, Bruce Wiseman and his team, and was fortunate enough, the late Barry Burnett was my instructor for 2 days, and just dropped all kinds of knowledge. And I spend a lot of my time telling people I'm just not that smart. So like I'm the idiot that pays the money to go to the conference, takes notes, and just come back and tries it. Always blows my mind when people, they'll spend a couple of grand, go to a conference, and then come up with a list of reasons why that won't work for their customers or their team or their process, totally. Right?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm an idiot. I came back and tried it, and I was really lucky to have a great team, a few good hires. We built a sales process. We built the comp plan, the customer-centric process. And very quickly moved on to sales management and turned that over to some of the team members. Was fortunate enough to give the opportunity to jump in along with our service department, start documenting those processes. After that got going, I jumped into commercial. So did B2B, equipment and maintenance program. So more of a classic B2B, cold calling, prospecting, outbounding, all that sort of stuff. Got a team and process going there. And learning all the time from the team and from the customers, with a lot of great leadership from the organization. And the thing about that is, as you go, you have to develop structure and plans. And what Ken Goodrich lays out, I was an E-Myth addict from the early days. I like to think, I'm in recovery now, but there's so many great principles there, right? And what I learned is if you show up to enough sales meeting complaining about leads, eventually they'll put you in marketing. So that's what happened. I was fortunate enough to join the executive team and was just talking about our customer journey. And so I was starting the evaluation, same process, go and look at our team, look at our budget, look at our results, our metrics, basic stuff. And through that process, I was evaluating vendors and looking for ways to make the customer journey easier, because I'm just sold out that that's our job, right? And I wasn't really finding much thing. And at the same time, Austin Haller, Rick's son, who I'd known for, the last 10, 15 years, he was doing his master's, and he was coming at it from the different side. And that's how the two of us connected. So kind of an accidental entrepreneur, and was just thrilled to support that team that's over there now with Ray, Strick, Austin, and the whole team. They're just doing amazing work. Along the way, the one thing that was consistent was, as soon as you stand the department up, you need to train the team to how to do it. You know, it's that old Sun Tzu art of war thing, like between the relationship between a general and the army, and we need to be clear, and we need to instruct, and quite frankly, we need to lead, right? And so along the way, I got a lot of practice at training, and that's really where my experience come from. been fortunate. Neil Bohr's, I think I say this whenever I can, because it's really a key aspect to development, is, you know, he was a Nobel winning physicist, and he just says an expert is just a man that's made all the mistakes possible in a very narrow field. Boy, that's not me, I don't know who is, right? That's so I was just fortunate enough. I we're going to talk about training and right. and future and stuff like that. I've made some, like, if you ever get a hold of some of my team members, they'll tell you there was some stinkers in there, but you learn, right? Like, you try and learn something on every flight.
I love it. Yeah,
can you share one of those? What's your either biggest failure or most formative failure throughout the journey at Heller?
You know, I think I just care too much. You know? No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, you know,
you had me. I was like,
trying to see where you were.
I guess I work too hard, is what I'm saying.
Holy
no,
shit.
I think it's hubris. It was hubris. You think you can. As the instructor, there's a relationship, you know, that the Zen master says, when the student's ready, the lesson appears. And there's an aspect of humility that it's not about when will these people get it. It's as the instructor, what do I need to do? How can I be malleable and flexible to convey the things that I need to convey, because I fully believe that, you know, as long as our culture is good and our onboarding is correct and we're hiring the right people, I truly believe that by and large, if people know what you know, they would do the same thing in the same situation as you. Mm. And so really it's just about connecting dots, right? So I think too early on, I went in and I was speaking at people. I was instructing for my goals, not for fruitful outcomes, I guess.
Yeah, got
does that
it.
Make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Did you discover that gift over time, or did you know, like, I'm a teacher, this is what I do?
Oh, I think it was, yeah, it was probably an outcome of necessity, you know, as growing departments, yep. You know, when they're small, they don't have a trainer, they don't have a full-time trainer. And as someone that commits to other members of the team about budgets and everything else, you really need to figure it out. And then again, I think it was the grace that was extended to make those mistakes and having a runway that was long enough to do that. I did figure it out. And I would say that as a bit of a lifetime learner, you know, and just like good salespeople, at the end of every call, you do an analysis. What did I do well? What did not? And again, I full credit to the team. They're pretty, we have sort of a fairly candid relationship and, you know, you can always tell a tree by the fruit, right? And it's either working or it's not.
Yeah. I want to ask you a quick question. This is kind of off topic, but because you mentioned, and I'm asking this question because I genuinely believe that these are the characteristics that not only, you know, that you have, but also the guys I've worked with at Schedule Engine, is everybody's okay with making a mistake and then owning it, not actually trying to hide it. Or,
yep.
If, you know, and I think this, and this is, can be, you know, in general too, is I think part of being a good leader is also owning that you too make mistakes, and it's the outcome of after the mistake. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a huge Ryan Holiday fan, and you know, he has this whole book, Ego is the Enemy. And if you want to poison your business, limit your growth, push away great people, yeah, just listen to your ego.
Yep. That's
right?
Good. That's good. I know a few of those guys.
Yeah. And listen, I have an ego. I've had an ego. And I think so when I talk about mistakes, I was that guy, right? Like, I can do this. And I had sharp elbows. I could, you know.
Sharp elbows.
There's an expression I heard, like, you know, you can't push a rope. And when I heard that, so much of my life fell into shape, because you can – you can try as much as you like, but it needs to be led, you know, from the front.
Sure.
And the best leaders I've known, and the people that I'm attracted to, like from a vocational standpoint, are humble leaders, servant leaders.
Love it.
And I think if you're really lucky, you find one of those in life.
Yeah, I would agree. I actually have I learned servant leadership, which is what I've practiced ever since, from a guy named Pat Eastburn. So shout out to Pat Eastburn. You probably listen to this, but you'll probably listen to this one now that I said his name.
Isn't this industry great for mentors? I mean, how, like, I think I forget who was that said it. Maybe Isaac Newton talks about we all stand on the shoulders of giants.
Giants, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. And when I think of whether it was, you know, Scott Rule who answered my Nextel back in the day at 2 a.m. mm-hmm. and helped me figure out the oil burner, or you know, the person that took me aside and says, you know, you totally talked over people in that meeting. Like, are you aware? Like, I think the trades that I know do that so much better than anything else. And it's truly humbling because at this point, if you've been the recipient of that gift, your job is just not to screw that up, right? You got to pay it forward.
Yep. I love it.
Yeah.
Love when it. You talked about, you know, having grace extended to you to make mistakes, I have found that, you know, having the confidence to be in over your head and learn things that can have an impact is like, that is the most important thing. So talk to me about, it sounds like you've went from, you know, department to department, and it's not always easy to leave a department if you don't set it up correctly. Right. Well, tell me about the journey to where you are now. So VP of Learning and Development, tell me what that looks like day to day.
Yeah. So day to day, I mean, you nailed it. It's not a department of one, it's a culture that values learning. Everybody, you know, wants the fruit, but nobody wants to tend to the roots. And unfortunately, the fruit is the last thing to grow on a tree, right?
Good.
And so at this point, it's a culture where we understand what learning looks like. We understand that it's behaviors, attitudes, techniques, right? There's all of that goes into it. But we've created a culture where people learn, and it starts from understanding your role as a trainer. But I think, you know, from the perspective of how do you know to go down that road, it's the difference between, you know, confidence and arrogance. I heard it sort of explained, like, if you have a track record in something that's been reasonably positive outcome, then there's reason to believe that the next thing that's sort of connected to that should go well. Like it would be arrogance for me to say, I'm going to go out and I don't even know the correct sport analogy, baseball bat, I don't know, 300, that's good, right? So like that would be arrogance because I've had any success in some area. For me to just go over and say, well, I'll be good at that too, is that's the hubris that we're talking about. But that we can have confidence in our systems and our people because we've seen and you really nurture that, you know, we fan these things into a flame and we create excitement and you know, I just did a thing this morning. We talk about culture and it's one of the Google guys describes culture simply as it's simply the behaviors that get rewarded or punished. That is your culture. You can read all the book, but at the end of the day, that's actually what's happening, right? And so when you look at creating a team, so now day to day, you know, I met with our commercial sales team this morning, but really there's people that have taken that baton. We put people in place around that, and they've they carry that as an ethos and a value system.
Go ahead,
Paul. How is what you do kind of different than like the traditional trainer at a company like Haller? Like, you're taking your lifelong ethic of being a lifelong learner, right, and applying that to the business is what I'm hearing culturally. But when people hear, you know, VP of training for a big 400 team member contractor, they're going to think like technical training. They're going to think skills, right. Task training. So what does it look like for you?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's the first, let's talk about how it usually comes up. Somebody says, hey, we need some training. And whether you have in-house or out, it's like our average ticket's down. So let's do sales training, right? Let's get like, I've worked with great people over the years. We brought Charlie Greer in 1 year, the great, you know, Charles Greer, industry legend.
Yep.
And that's an option. But the first thing you really got to do is have a proper diagnosis. And so you think of the five Qs or the question behind the question, whichever, you know, format you want to take. But it's really being a good diagnostic person. And so typically a manager will come to me and I'll say, hey, why do you think you need sales training? And he'll go, well, average ticket is down. And they're like, well, so what is it? And you can get to, and it can be a number of different things, right? We know technicians. Can be interesting, and it could just be that they've fallen away from their optionizing, right? So that's really a system issue. They're offering things, but they're not getting it. So that's a soft skill communication, you know, preparation thing. But you know, quite often if texts don't have 101% of the answer about something, including the name of the guy that made it in the factory, sometimes they just won't bring it up because that's their persona, right? It's the hero. I the idea of someone asking them a question and them not having an answer, we're getting into like personas and how we see ourselves and archetypes. Well, okay, so maybe the correct solution is to bring in the rep and have them do a thorough training, or maybe it's soft skills. And so completely diagnosing that, whether it's in-house or out-house, is the start of anything. And from there, then it is just about, you get into sort of signaling. If the only time you do training is a response to something wrong, listen, people aren't dumb, reaction, right? It's like, great, what conference did you go to now? Great. Oh, what books are you reading now? And if that's the only time we're doing things, well, of course. So this is where the culture part. And so, you can create these, you can harness human instinct as well and set up expectations. It's going to take 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks at times for people to know that the space that we're coming to is a safe space. And we can joke about that all we want, but it's how we all are. And nobody likes to make a fool of themselves. And then from there, if you've created the expectation of, oh, this is where we come and we take part and we have fun and it's engaging and we celebrate, then at that point, it's just about the techniques and it's about some simple rules. It's not like so many trainers, the number one mistake they make is, it's the same as sales. We talk too much, right? And anybody that knows me knows the irony of this. But really, it's a Socratic process. Just as when anybody tells us, a loved one, prospect, whatever, tells us something, the first instinct shouldn't be to go, got it. And then solution, it should be, wow, tell me more about that. And then it should be to restate, like, does this mean this, this, and this, right? And so there's techniques that come to play as well so that you fully understand what it is. And then it's just understanding people at the end of the day. I know a lot of incredible technicians that are the burliest silverback alpha males you ever want. But you ask them to read in a meeting, they'll buckle, because we're getting into when people come into our organizations, we're handed quite a precious thing, because if we're lucky, we get the whole person. And what we get into is, there was that one thing that their teacher said when they were seventh that left a mark. And now flash forward 30 years later, the reason they're not taking part in the meeting isn't anything to do with you, right? That's ego. Maybe they're just scarred, right? So obviously we're getting pretty woo-woo, but that's like, we deal with people, right? Yeah. At the end of the day, it's just people. And so it's subjugating your ego, seeking first to understand before seeking to be understood, pretty basic stuff, but that's what it looks like. And then once that culture's created, anybody can take that meeting. One of the team members can take that meeting.
Yeah. Random thought real quick.
Yeah.
Because I think this applies here, is do you believe that respect is given or respect is earned? Now I'm going to give you an olive branch.
Go for it.
I believe that respect is given. That you have my respect and it's yours to lose type of methodology. What's your thoughts on that?
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard. That's totally right.
Sorry, everybody, we got to go.
Okay. Who are we? This is where titles get like in people's heads, positions get wonky. Like, we're all in this together.
Yep.
You think, it's that whole thing. You want to see how irreplaceable you are, stick your hand in the bucket of water, pull it out, see what happens, right? Listen, everybody has intrinsic value, right? Everybody has intrinsic value. We've all known people that, like, all of a sudden you've known them for 8 years and then you see them at an open mic night and they're these incredible musicians. Who knew?
Open
right?
Mic, yeah.
Or, they're pilots on the weekend, or, they foster kids. Like, again, a lot of the conversation right now is about loyalty in the industry and people jumping ship, because there's a sea change underway. That really started 20 years ago, but we're dealing with it now. Mm-hmm. And people are like, well, these people aren't loyal. But if everything you set up is a transactional relationship, then isn't that the natural outcome of that? So I think it was Andy Stanley that says, you pay for a man's hands, but you want his soul. You pay for his back, but you want his heart. Like, we talk about people not being fully invested, but we only ever deal with them in these transactional aspects. So I think it's the right and proper thing to do is to extend grace to everybody, seek to understand, and, you know.
I love it.
Your range in drawing quotes, like exact quotes from different authors all over the spectrum, from like modern Christianity to East Asian studies, is unbelievable, by the way. Like, I'm sitting over here stunned at that. So great job.
Well, that $5 will get you a coffee at Starbucks. So I got
right,
it.
Exactly.
Until I start hearing some Sir William Wallace quotes, though, like,
freedom! There they go.
So you said something about, I think you said sea change, like there's a change that's coming that's been brewing for 20 years. Go a little deeper on that. Tell me what that change is. Why is it happening? What are people not aware of?
Yeah. So opinions, these are my opinions only, but it comes from, I've been fortunate over the last number of years, you know, a member of the board at ACCA, member of the board at NAIT, you know, speaking at, you know, service world or whatever else, and speaking to contractors for the last couple of years, you know, I've got a sense of things. And here's my high level headline. There's been a labor shortage for the last 25 years. No shock there. I think the difference is now technicians know it, right?
Yep.
They're really starting to see their worth. And what I'm afraid of is, because of the negotiations are always relative to options, right? You've got more options, you can push hard. If you got one options, you take the deal that's given, right? And we just need to understand that times have changed. You know, I think it's Jocko Willink talked about, you know, ego. Our job as leaders is to accept reality, right? That's it. And that goes for customers, technicians, whatever. Like, our job isn't to get really good at doing business this one way. It's to understand the landscape, and as an entrepreneur, to figure out how to make the most return or investment ethically whilst doing no harm, right? So, like, we shouldn't get our panties in a bunch when things change. And my concern is that we're taking I'll say this about myself. It's real easy when you were told as an on-call tech, hey, you got five more calls, and yeah, you need to take them, right? And if you don't like it, hit the highway. We've all heard that. I'm a Gen Xer, but I pride myself on being a sort of pro-boomer, because that's how we were raised, right? It was command control. And here's the thing. Throughout history, there's only ever been two responses to control: comply or defy. And the outcome, the choice that people made was relative to their options, right? And so most of us coming up through a post-war managerial structure, very hierarchical, very structured, the war was all about getting logistics, men, and people, and resources in place at the right time to follow through on the orders. And when we saw this, that entire generation came out and they went to these big industries that invested in management training and harnessed, you know, the war years did an incredible job at educating leaders. And it's really interesting. You can look at the Google searches of the leadership and management over the years, and you can see, because sometimes they're synonymous, but there are differences.
Certainly.
So they made great management and all the industries saw growth in the year, but it was very command control. It was always because I said so, and there wasn't really room for discussion. It was, well, you know, fast forward, I think, you know, that only goes so far. And so we've got people that have options. And if you tell people, because I said so, you know, you're going to find yourself with only a very few select options for recruiting.
Yeah. I completely agree. I'm so super passionate about recruiting, and I am super passionate about all that. I think that the more humanized you can make the business, the better for your long-term value, your long-term options.
Yeah. And so here's the deal. It's hard running a business, right? It's
certainly
hard. It's very hard. It's always going to be hard. And you don't get to not do the hard if you want the rewards, but you do get to choose your hard.
Yeah.
Just think about how we do business, both from a customer perspective and an employee perspective. We get to we dispatch a certain way because the software was set up, or because that's what's efficient, or because it's hard to train. It takes, you know, years and years to train a dispatcher.
Right.
So we give customers windows and we tell them this. And we, you know, at a certain point, it's like that goldfish that, you know, is in a tank and is trained and then it goes into bigger fish. We can't imagine a world that isn't structured that way. Well, guess what? An entire generation is rising and saying, you know, my friends don't understand when I say, when they ask me what time I'm coming home and I say, I don't know, they flip their lid. They don't understand. Right. And me, if I have the choice, we don't listen. You know, if you're in a rural area and there's like one company, that may be it. But it, I think we can all understand that, you know, the invisible hand and economics, like you're going to, if that's the way you are, you're going to create space in the market for someone else that might just operate a little differently, whether it's a customer perspective or an employee perspective. And by the way, if you own supply, you can create, you know, you can command demand.
Yeah. I want to segue to something because you'd mentioned it and it's something that we're passionate about is you said having to take the time to learn technology. First off, I think everything is relative at this point. Like, you know, I'll have you know, employees, and we have a little over 100, including all of our call listening and reporting team. But people will say, oh man, I'm so busy. And I get it because we are. Yep. We are constantly, we never lack things to do. But if you can take this big, like, oh my gosh, I'm busy, I have all this stuff to do, and drill it down to, hey man, you've only got your 9 hours. These guys work four nines and a four. We work half days on Fridays. Just boil it down to the 8 hours, boil it down to the 1 hour, you know, however you compartmentalize your day and just focus on that task. Like it, you're never not going to have something to do. So, I think that, you know, technology is something that you have to really consider. And you said a couple things too, is this is a very reactive business. You know, and even our customers, you know, the contractors' customers are reactionary, right? Like it's typically a reactionary business. So, but technology can help you become more proactive in your business and can help you scale and all this stuff. So let's segue into that because you mentioned it. And I know you're super passionate about it, but what is your view, you know, on technology in the trades?
Yeah, great question. And you know, what I love about technology is it's incredibly egalitarian. Back in the day, only the big boys had the website and the web developer and all of that. Well, now, I can quite often, for $400, I can get a Squarespace website and within 3 hours have it up. And it's got functions and features that, you know, that wasn't available before. So for that reason, I love technology. I feel it's a great equalizer. And someone that's great at customer service and wants a lifestyle business can deploy the right technology to meet their life goals. That being said, I think the rule is we tend to think it's a panacea. Right? Like, oh, I know all the big guys have this, so I'll just get that. And what happens is you end up with a Ferrari when you need a daily driver, right? And and then you get this animosity towards how complex it is versus complicated. And so I think it was Bill Gates that mentioned, like, you know, technology doesn't solve it. And if you take great technology and put it on top of poor processes, guess what? It's not a magic wand. And I think if the technology team is guilty of anything, it's like, sure, we can do that. It's always on the roadmap, right? Everything's on the roadmap. So I think understanding exactly what you want technology to do, not just now, but, you know, you should probably think a bit longer than you think, because there's typically at a certain point there's a cost to deploying and change.
Sure, yeah.
That is real.
Yep.
Friction, churn, everything.
Yep.
And so I think I think people can dream bigger. I think more Imagineers, right? Like, what do I want my business to look like in 2030? Because, like Tony Robbins says, like I just quoted Tony Robbins. All right, mental. Okay, he says like a leader's job is to see the future. You know, things as they are, not better, not worse, just as they are, to see the future as it can be, and then make it so. Right, and that's just blocking and tackling at that point. But it starts with great, you know, Imagineers, and not just like revenue, but like, think the good things you do. Like, I believe contractors should be profitable. I have this saying, like, be good to do good. Like, if we're good, like all these companies this time you're giving away furnaces and all this other stuff, but we got to be profitable, right? We got to be healthy to do that. So let's be good so we can do good, right? And I think technology is a big part of that, but it starts by understanding what you need, playing the tape forward a little bit, and then making the right choice for you. And I think there's there's a principle, I think it's General Curlaw, Curlaw's Law. It's this idea of strategic lieutenants. In a fast-changing world, so again, it's another military paradigm. You know, back in the day, you could get like those 20 people around a table pushing like little cardboard cutouts of tanks, and you know, like, and things moved slower. You could choose to be at a front three months from now and just start moving. Well, fast forward, I had the opportunity to be with Stanley McChrystal and his team, and they talk about the speed and complexity of the world when you're deploying an order, a mission for tomorrow. And by the time your guys are kicking in that door in downtown Fallujah, everybody's long gone because that's the world in which we're living in. The important thing to understand about technology is the exponential growth and adoption of it, right? So I believe Curlaw's Law says the people closest to kicking in the door are the ones that are probably best informed on what to do. And I think if more people engage their teams through this process, technology not only would be better selected, better deployed, but also better utilized. And so again, it's a bit of like, you got to put your ego aside because you're paying the check and you know, listen, yeah, that's real. But like, if we engage the right people, they got to earn a right, right? Not everybody's opinion gets the same way. Everybody gets an opinion, but I don't have to take it the same way. You have to have a history of predictability and success and all that, right? And that's the leadership's job to figure that out. But invite people in that are closest to it and then put your listening ears on. And I think that technology, can be good. The thing about technology is it's not just what we need for our business. Our customers are being trained what to expect from every single other occupation. And I think we've been given a pass for a number of years. Clock's ticking.
The clock's ticking. And there's a gap. And I know you feel at least some personal responsibility to help close that gap. So what does it look like in the next 5 to 10 years, and what's your role going to be in all of that?
Yeah. I think I'll read the tea leaves, right? Like, history's filled with like people that prognosticated and were, I heard an economist say like the trick is you give a number, but not a date, or a date, but not a number. Right. So, yeah. So let's just, yeah. We'll do broad strokes. What I believe is convenience is king, right? We're just never, you're just never going to train your customer.
Absolutely.
To not think that way. And it's sort of like, remember the airlines, you know, the level of service used to be pretty high and what was included was pretty high. And then the minute that first airline said, we're not going to serve that, everybody else are like, we can cut costs too.
Yeah, thank goodness.
They said, we're going to charge you for your suitcase. All of a sudden, like, everybody is like trying to get on board so they, because they've got their entire life's contents into a carry-on that's never going to fit in that plane. And yet we all watch the theater, right? It's the same. Like, it only takes one incumbent to come in and say, you know what, I think there's a better way of doing it. Because it's sort of like purple cow stuff. Like Seth Godin talks about, you know, if to be remarkable, you have to be remarkable. It's not that hard. Like, what are we doing that's really any different? You guys are on websites. You can pick 50 existing companies' websites. Some version of we've been in business for X, X number of hours factory training, X number of combined experience, satisfaction guaranteed. You know, and back in the day, you know, having drug tested people and shoe covers and, you know, drop cloths, that was enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, we got to be remarkable. And so that's where I think customers are going to find those, because that's just the way it works. You can't hold back that tide of customer expectation. I think there's a fallacy about how technology is adopted that I think that contractors should pay attention to. It's like we think that iPhone's always been around. We think that the iPod. We forget that Dell and Microsoft had versions, right? They weren't as good. They weren't as convenient. But it wasn't like this universal adoption. So just because you see some technology that's stuttering or popping up here and there and doesn't seem like an overnight success, don't be fooled into thinking that it's not important. Mm-hmm. Right. It's just the crowd settling. And so we all know people or technology that this, you know, 5 to 10 year overnight success, all of a sudden it's everywhere. It's that feeling of being ubiquitous. So yeah, that's, I think not sleeping on things just because you don't value them or you don't feel you need to, totally fine, totally valid. But if somebody offers it, you can't complain then about, you know,
Yeah, and you can't be afraid of doing it and trying it. Like, I can remember when we first started the company back in 08, and like even then websites were like, oh my gosh, like, yep. Do I get a website? You know, and then it yep. was, and we really capitalized on that because I believed so much in that forward, you know, thought process of like, this is going to be a thing. Now, when apps started coming out,
yeah,
we got in the app game and started building it and trying to think, well, how can I make an app mm-hmm. work for a contractor?
Yep.
But the thing that I feel like that I got good, I'm good at by chance is being a visionary and actually doing and acting on it. And yep. not everything's worked out. Like I listen to, because a part of what we do at Rhino is listen to every single call that comes through every customer's website. I'm talking every single call.
Right on.
Is you hear how the CSRs are answering phones. Well, I would love to have just used a piece of software that listens for keyword triggers and use that technology. Yep. And we tried it and it still was inaccurate. So there was no substitute right. for human beings in that, in, you know, in that particular department. So we have a lot of like 50 plus people on yep. that team. But here's where I'm going with that is, what we found was that by listening to it, you could hear when CSRs are making mistakes and we could send it over to you guys to listen to it through a call tracking number, again, technology. Yep. But we adopted it early on, trying to use it to our advantage to do what's best for our customers. Well, also, if that's what's best for our customers, it's what's best for us as a company. But you right. have to try things. When we listened to that, we were hearing the after-hours answering services butcher leads coming in, which is, by the way, a huge pain in my ass to hear, and everybody else's, because who knows how much revenue we're losing.
Marketing is not working, right?
My
when
goodness.
It's the conversion.
Well, when it was an after-hours call, I was like, this is pre-Paul being over at Rhino, is I said, hey, how difficult can it be to launch an after-hours answering service? Because these guys suck. Like, every after-hours answering service was awful, and I was like, I can't deal with this shit anymore. So we yep. launched our own after-hours answering service. I did it for 2.5 years. It was phenomenal. We tracked the revenue that came through it, the close ratios. We were pitching maintenance agreements on it for our customers. I'd never been in this business before, you know, of after-hours answering service. Now, I'll tell you this. It was a failure of mine from a business perspective because I lost so much money trying to implement it. But it was coming from the right place, and I wasn't afraid to yep. try it because I was trying to do what's best for my customers.
Yep.
But I was utilizing that technology to try and figure things out that aren't just my own need but for my customers' needs. So when it comes to technology, man, right now when we decided to only focus on the trades,
yeah,
all I had to do was chase the technology. I knew the trade. So if I stay in the forefront yep. of technology, then Rhino will always be the go-to company that's at the forefront of tech.
So I love it. Couple of things. If you're listening to every call, I doubt that your success is an accident. It's sort of like that golfer that's at the driving range and he's putting and he's putting and the guy goes, oh man, that was a real lucky shot. And the pro says, yeah, it's funny. The more I practice, the luckier I get, right? So I'm sure there's no accident on your part. The second is fear of failure. You know, failure isn't fatal, right? Lack of innovation
exactly.
is how most things go. Like I'm a huge sort of space program nerd. You know how many rockets blew up to meet Kennedy's proclamation of going to the moon? Like you got to be prepared to blow up a few rockets. It's okay. But that's how you get a moonshot. You don't get a moonshot by playing it safe. You got to leave the lab at some point. You got to leave the theoretical. You got to try something. It's okay.
Love it.
You'll get early warning feedback. And then lastly, I think there's this, you know, fulfillment of promise that we want. We have to be brave. We got to dare bravely. And when I think of some of the things you're talking about, I think there's the application of the right technology with the right people, like right people and incredible systems. That there's a lot of AI going on in our right. space right now that is getting much better. Because here's the thing: we're in exponential sort of learning at this point. These machines teach themselves once you've primed the pump, right? And so you're going to see that exact technology you're talking about, you're going to see. And lastly, the shameless marketer in me, we don't have a marketing problem. We have a conversion problem. Put your customers at the center of everything you do and figure out how to build around that. Not what's easiest for you.
I love it, man. We have
so many quotes. We can just like, how do you name this podcast?
Well,
we'll find out.
Yeah. So Zach, who is who listens to the podcast and then helps us come up with the episode names, is going to have a heyday with this one. So shout out to you, buddy.
So good.
So guys, we're at like 55 minutes into this thing. So I want to try and wrap. But it's easy, right? Could just go down this path. I mean, there's so much that we can hit on, but you hit on a few key things that I think that I, again, my core beliefs are exactly this is it's one, being humble. I heard you say that, you know, humanize your business a little bit. Be okay. You know, you be okay with trying something and it failing and moving on. That already puts you ahead of majority of your peers, I believe. But, you know, and then also, you know, you had said, and you were saying this, you know, as like a, you know, a negative towards you, but really, you know, it's a positive. I know it's a positive is, you trying to be like the dumbest guy in the room is actually an extremely smart move to do because, you know, that's how you learn and continue to move.
That's how you level up.
And I'm a huge fan of that. But I part of that is being humble enough to know, like, you got to drop that ego, like you said, and be okay with being the dumbest guy in the room.
Yeah.
Because it's actually the smartest play. And right. And being proactive, you know, and listen, it's okay to not be the tough guy. You know, like you talked about having, like, the big silver bad guys. It's okay. It's actually better for you to not be the tough guy if that helps you move on past whatever is holding you up from being a good human being to your peers, to your customers, to, you know, I think being humble is a significant strength in a human being. Because someone who's humble is willing to learn and to move on and to accept change and to get better and to do it graciously. And those are good traits in a human being. But those are also people who are typically willing to try, you know, to be proactive and try new stuff because they're okay that it might fail and they might look like an asshole or they might look like an idiot or whatever.
That's right.
So I'm a huge fan of those things.
Yeah, appreciate it.
And you had mentioned convenience is king, and I want to finish with this real quick too. Much like when people were, you know, having, you know, not wanting to get websites, it was inevitable that you were going to have to get a site. And what's crazy is still to this day, people come to us that don't even have a website. They've been in business for like 10 plus years. It blows my mind that happens. Right. But if you hear what Eddie said, convenience is king. Speed is a necessity. You can ignore it, but your customers aren't. You got to do something. And this is what I've believed in for so long is, listen, man, the reason that this smartphone exists and they sell so many of them and they're billions, you know, in revenue is because it's what people want. It's what they use. It's not going anywhere. So you have to do something about it that moves your business forward, and technology is that piece of the business, I believe. So there's a human aspect of it and the technology aspect of it. If you can conquer those two things, I 100% believe you'll be extremely successful. Do you agree, Eddie?
I totally agree. I can tell you today there's companies that exist that are actively solving this problem. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I do things like this is because of the love I have for the industry.
Yep.
And if we don't solve our stuff, it's going to be done too, as in none of us can complain when that happens, right? Yep. You know, there's companies out there that have already figured out the role in the truck isn't always the best answers. You know, how do we create the teledoc of home services, right? Like, because that's what's easiest for us, because that's how our business functions. The water is being boiled, and it's being boiled by degrees, but I'm telling you, it's happening. And you need to look around. You need to take this stuff seriously. Talk to people like yourself that are engaged in this.
Yep.
And remember, as I always say, not making a choice is still making a choice.
Yep. Oh, so good.
So good. Hey, let's do this real quick to close this thing out. I'm going to do it a little bit differently because I'm such a believer in the Schedule Engine software and product. I just want to do this. Not like this huge like pitch or anything like this. What I want to talk about is, you mentioned Teladoc. Part of what happened during this whole COVID thing, like that really kind of came into play on, you know, let's just talk real quick about what are the key pieces of Schedule Engine that have been the most beneficial to the contractors. So let's just hit on that real quick. Like the key things that, you know, are the game changers.
Like, I mean, there's a bunch we could talk. We just had an incident the other day where someone's phones went out and they got online and they got on their Facebook and people, their phones, you know, the lifeblood of our business, because that's how we book calls, right?
Yep.
And they were able to continue to book calls. The quality after our service, you know, we're seeing hundreds and thousands of appointments being booked after hours when your office staff or your answering service next to where to find good people is where to find a good answering service. Probably two most asked questions in most of these chat groups, right? And so
those somebody things,
we do.
But I think the thing that to figure out is you can't force your business your customer to do business the way you want to do. And listen, if somebody wants to call, mazel tov. But if they don't, you need a super highway of conversion points. And your job isn't to force your customer into one of them. It's to make sure that regardless of how they want to do business with you today, they can do it. Yep. So whether at
100%
online, right? It's like, you know, you're going to, again, choose your hard. Do you really want to spend all your marketing dollars telling people how to do business? Now, bear in mind, that same customer in a different situation the next day may choose to do business with you a different way because it's about them. And I would tell you, like, understanding your customer journey with a no BS filter is super critical. So there's that, but it's all about easy. It's going to be easy. And honestly, put yourself in the consumer's shoes. How many of us, when we're trying to talk to like Apple support, want to go stand at the mall and figure that out or chat? Sure. Yep. Right. And so it's all about convenience and we shouldn't be dogmatic about what, like creating corrals because, you know, nobody likes to have something done to them. They like to be part of an experience that's remarkable. And I think focusing on conversion. You know, your funnel has a leak.
Yep. Yeah. I'm on board with you so much because it doesn't matter how you want to do business. It matters how your customers want to do business. And sometimes they want to pick up the phone and call. Sometimes they want to chat you. Sometimes they just want to book on your site. No matter what it is,
right?
You got to be that. You have to have that option for them to be able to do business with you.
Absolutely. And do something.
Yeah.
Try it.
Yeah. Exactly. I appreciate that.
Yeah. It's coming,
dude. I'm excited. I appreciate you being on here, man, and sharing this. You drop more quotes in one episode. I can't wait to have Zach add these up and catch them all, and like let's document them and figure out
it's
what
a
it
bad
is.
Habit.
Hyperlink them.
No, it's great. I love it because you're drawing from the knowledge that you've learned from other like extremely successful entities and things like that.
I can't wait for the comment section was like, so-and-so didn't say that, so-and-so said that. That's not what I guess. We can all get fact-checked in real time.
Yeah, who cares? Well, listen.
Zero shame.
Zero shame. Well, listen, I know like because everybody's listening to this and, you know, and Christmas is coming up or Hanukkah, happy holidays, whatever. Yeah. But I know you're going to be out wassailing, you know, for Christmas, which, by the way, is Scottish for caroling. You see that? God, aren't I good? I'm sure that's what you're going to be out there doing.
I'm feeling so culturally appreciated right now. I might go put a kilt on.
That's all. Listen, bagpipes, like, give me the chills. So, I really appreciate you. Man, I appreciate your heart for the trades, man, and you coming on here, too. And I legit mean that. Everybody knows, like, I am a super empathetic person, man. And I legit care about you spending your time with us. Like this is an hour. And I believe that time is our most valuable asset. And so thank you, man. You've been in the trades for so long. You're doing what you can. I really appreciate, you guys stepping out and creating Schedule Engine. I absolutely believe it's the best. That's why we partner with you on it. We believe it's the best option for anyone in the trades, for those who don't want to talk to you, they just want to book an appointment or talk to somebody on chat, which by the way, like ask my daughter. I haven't seen her in like 3 days because she holds up in a room on her phone and computer. Maybe that's bad parenting. I don't know. But it is what it is. Like I have to be okay. Like that's part of what culture is and what's going to be. So that's right. I appreciate you, man.
I appreciate this. We should do it again. This is a blast.
Certainly will. And listeners, do not forget, Eddie swore that we would get that if we want to sign up and give a Schedule Engine a go, that we waive the setup fee. And the first month is on really us mutually. So I appreciate that, dude, even though you really didn't have a say-so in it. I appreciate it so much.
That's good. It's good.
Well, listen, I appreciate it. I'm sure we'll do this again. And listeners, listen, have a happy holiday. We are super grateful for you. It's the end of the year. Do not wait until January to say, oh, shit, I forgot the plan for 2021.
Could've.
It's already late, so get on it, right? It's go time. Start putting plans in place. It's not too late. But don't procrastinate into the beginning part of the year, because then you're already behind a lot of your major competitors. So let's go. We appreciate you so much. Thank you for the reviews. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for our great guests we've had this year, our listeners. Eddie, appreciate you. Tall Paul, any last words? And do not ask a question and draw this thing out another 5 minutes, but any last words from you?
I will not. I will just thank our guest for his time. He was incredibly insightful and might be our best dressed, kind of stylish guest of all time as well. So set the bar pretty high.
Eddie, I can't wait to have a pint with you in person, brother.
Right on. Looking forward to it. Hit me up on LinkedIn. Find me. Talk to me. I'm lonely.
Awesome.
Let's keep the conversation going.
Wonderful. If anybody wants to connect with Eddie and you need to go and you want to come through us, we'll make sure to connect you with them as well. We appreciate it. Until Cheers. Next time, we'll see you.
Thank you for listening to The Point. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please consider leaving us a review in the App Store. And don't forget to share with your friends. Till next time, kick some ass.
Welcome to The Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show. So stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point.